Today, you've joined hundreds of established and emerging writers who are discovering ways to reach their writing goals and have fun by being more curious, creative, and productive. You're listening to Ann Croker, Writing Coach. This is episode 106, Learn from the Best. Imitate, but don't plagiarize. Are you a carnivorous reader? Francine Prose says in Reading Like a Writer, I've heard the way a writer reads described as reading carnivorously. What I've always assumed that this means is not, as the expression might seem to imply, reading for what can be ingested, stolen, or borrowed, but rather for what can be admired, absorbed, and learned. It involves reading for sheer pleasure, but also with an eye and a memory for which author happens to do which thing particularly well. When we learn from the best, the greats, they become mentors. We do this by reading with an analytical eye and carnivorous mind to gain insights into what works and apply principles and actual techniques to our own projects. In episode 104, we talked about interacting with texts by writing in a book's margins, annotating as we go, which engages us at various levels with an analytical eye. It's an excellent practice to begin and continue with books you own. Another way to read analytically for the purpose of improving as writers is to follow Benjamin Franklin's method, which aligns nicely with Francine Prose's description of carnivorous reading, or reading for what can be admired, absorbed, and learned. Early on, Benjamin Franklin's father noted his son's bookish inclination and apprenticed him to Franklin's brother, a printer, where Ben quickly learned the business. This new situation gave Ben access to books he borrowed through a friend, exposing him to greater variety, including poetry, which he began to write. Benjamin's father discouraged the poetry, warning that verse makers were generally beggars. Ben shifted to prose and explains in his autobiography how he improved his prose writing skill. He'd debate with a good friend of his and always found this other young man was naturally more eloquent, had a ready plenty of words, and sometimes, as I thought, bore me down more by his fluency than by the strength of his reasons. They wrote each other when his friends couldn't meet up in person for some reason, continuing to take sides on an unresolved argument, and Benjamin's dad happened to find the letters and read them. Franklin reported that his father noted, "Though I had the advantage of my antagonist's incorrect spelling and pointing, which I owed to the printing house, I fell far short in elegance of expression, in method, and in perspicuity, of which he convinced me by several instances. I saw the justice of his remarks, and thence grew more attentive to the manner in writing, and determined to endeavor at improvement." To expand his vocabulary, grow more eloquent, and express himself more fluently, Ben devised a method. He bought a magazine called The Spectator, read it, and enjoyed it. "I thought the writing excellent," he writes, "and wished, if possible, to imitate it. With this view, I took some of the papers and, making short hints of the sentiment in each sentence, laid them by a few days, and then, without looking at the book, tried to complete the papers again by expressing each hinted sentiment at length and as fully as it had been expressed before, in any suitable words that should come to hand. Then I compared my Spectator with the original, discovered some of my faults, and corrected them." This simple system is an easy one to follow. The first step is to find writing you admire and make short hints of the sentiment in each sentence. My kids used a writing program geared for K-12 students that uses Franklin's method. It comes from the Institute for Excellence in Writing. Students read a source text or mentor text, then return to the beginning of the piece and write out two or three key words per sentence, like Franklin's short hints of the sentiment in each sentence. The kids were then to recreate the piece from this keyword outline and whatever memory they retained of the original text. By doing this, comparing their version with the original, they learned how that writer expressed himself on paper and learned to do the same through imitation. I worked with my kids on the assignments, and Ben Franklin's method seemed to give my kids a solid understanding of how to organize and express ideas. Looking back at that original, they could see how their version was different, for better or for worse. But for Ben and my kids, there's the issue of vocabulary, or the lack thereof. When Ben tried to recreate a sentence, he realized his mental storehouse was lacking a stock of words, or at least he couldn't call up effective words when he needed them. He realized if he had continued making verses, even bad ones, he might have acquired a vaster vocabulary because poets need to play with words, lots of words, to find the best fit for a particular phrase or line. Verse making might have locked in greater variety. Unfortunately, thanks to his dad, he quit. But that brief foray into poetry gave Ben an idea. He took some of the tales, as he called them, and turned them into verse, which required him to integrate totally different words in order to create appropriate rhythm and rhyme. After a time, when I had pretty well forgotten the prose, he explains, I turned them back again. The transition from prose to poetry and back again, leaving gaps of time in between each stage, locked in new words he incorporated during the poetry stage. Now, some people worry that this imitation process might tempt us to tumble into some form of plagiarism, or they're afraid copying another writer's style and voice will keep us from developing our own. In fact, L.L. Barkat writes in her book, Rumors of Water, that a lot of writers she used to work with would go through what she calls the Ann Voskamp phase. Best-selling author Ann Voskamp has a distinctive style, so when another writer finds herself influenced by it, the reader can easily spot the similarity to Voskamp's pacing and sentence structure. Barkat advised her editors to point this out to any writer who was sounding a little too Voskamp-y and encouraged the writer to try instead to develop her own voice and style. But others believe that emulation or imitation can be one path that leads us to our voice, especially when we're in the early stages of our writing lives. Even Francine Prose, as experienced and skilled as she is, feels the influence of greats can be a good thing. In her book, Reading Like a Writer, she says, after I've written an essay in which I've quoted at length from great writers, so that I've had to copy out long passages of their work, I've noticed that my own work becomes, however briefly, just a little more fluent. In a 99U article, Todd Henry claims artists go through four stages, one of those being emulation. He says, mimicking the work of their influences, these artists were able to build a basic platform of skills necessary to eventually branch out and explore new territory. He quotes Stephen King from On Writing, imitation preceded creation. I would copy Combat Casey comics word for word in my Blue Horse tablet, sometimes adding my own descriptions where they seemed appropriate. In that same article, Henry let Ursula K. Le Guin caution the reader. When imitating, it's necessary to remember the work, however successful, is practice. Not an end in itself, but a means toward the end of writing with skill and freedom in one's own voice. So, as a learning exercise, as you endeavor at improvement, to follow Ben Franklin's phrase as well as his method, emulate the voices of others insofar as they aid you in expressing yourself in your own voice. It's practice, not an end in itself. To review, Franklin used key words to recall sentences from the original mentor text. He'd compare his version with the original and correct mistakes as part of the learning process. And in hopes of increasing vocabulary, he turned prose into poetry and back again. He added one more level of challenge to improve his flow and organization of ideas. He mixed up his key words or those hints of sentiment so they were no longer ordered the same as the original. Then he reworked, reordered, and rephrased them as he composed complete sentences. When he had a final version, he read the piece in its entirety to see how well he arranged his thoughts. And he says this, by comparing my work afterward with the original, I discovered many faults and amended them, but I sometimes had the pleasure of fancying that, in certain particulars of small import, I had been lucky enough to improve the method of the language. And this encouraged me to think I might possibly, in time, come to be a tolerable English writer, of which I was extremely ambitious. Well, I'd say it worked. In time, Benjamin Franklin, one of America's founding fathers, did indeed come to be a tolerable English writer, thanks to his ambition and his method. Who would you choose to mentor you? What author's text could school you on word choice, clarity, organization, and elegance of expression? Could Ben Franklin's method help you advance your vocabulary and increase the storehouse of words to wield as you work? Try it. Find mentor texts to read, set aside, and attempt to recreate from the two or three keywords you note from each sentence, those sentiment hints. Like Benjamin Franklin, through carnivorous reading and emulation, you'll learn from the best and doubtless grow to become, in time, a more than tolerable English writer. I'm Ann Croker, cheering you on as a writing coach in your ear, everywhere we may meet, at my website, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, here on this podcast, or even in person. I'm always looking for ideas to share with you that will help you achieve your writing goals and have fun by being more curious, creative, and productive. Thank you for listening.